This episode of Chats with the Chatfields is brought to you by Full Bucket Veterinary Strength Supplements.
Welcome to this episode of Chats with the Chatfields. This is a podcast to expand your idea of what impacts veterinarians, pet owners, and basically all animal lovers in the galaxy as humans. We are your hosts. I'm Dr. Jen the Vet.
And I'm Dr. Jason.
If you have not yet subscribed to our show,
why not?
Just go to chatfieldshow.com and subscribe today. And if you want to reach us, you can find me with any message of love and positivity at jen@chatfieldshow.com.
And if you want to reach out to me with any other real life messages, you can reach me at jason@chatfieldshow.com.
Okay, today into the chat room, that's chat with a capital C, comes a very good friend of mine. Are you ready, Jason?
I'm surprised you have one of those. This is going to be exciting for everybody.
I mean, come on.
Not just a friend, which is always exciting, but a very good friend.
Yes, he's a very good friend of mine. So, and he's a smarty pants. And that's one of the reasons I really enjoy talking with him. And he has an accent.
It seems to be a theme.
Yeah. So even when he says stupid stuff, it sounds smart, right?
Wow. Not going to be your friend for long with that.
No, but he's good times, but he's also, he's a Fulbright specialist. He's a professor at a leading veterinary school. And he's great fun, and we'll try not to giggle too much. Let's welcome into the chat room, my friend, Dr. Jorg Meyer. Hey, Jorg.
Oh, howdy. Howdy there. Good morning.
Howdy. All right. I love it. It's a throwback to Texas A&M, huh? Howdy. Can we get a giggle? Whoop. That's got them all. Right. Like that's all the sound effects A&M does.
That's it. Yeah.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. So Jorg, we wanted to come on today and talk with you because you know that you are my phone a friend for actually an array of species when I find myself stuck trying to figure out what's going on. And we call them the fancy word is what? Exotic companion animals, right?
Sure. Yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah, it does.
We just, you know, for some reason, pocket pets became politically not correct. I don't even know where that came from initially, because most of them wouldn't be happy in your pocket. So right. I don't know.
Why is it not politically correct to call it? No one says that. I'm so out of it. I'm sorry. So no one calls them pocket pets anymore? I'm pretty sure I used that term.
You're not supposed to. So a lot of people do call them, but for some reason, it's not considered adequate anymore. Don't ask me why. Politics is not my thing.
You just go with the
point of the animal. I'm just like, all right, don't call them pocket pets. Call them like exotic pets, for example. Right?
So yes. That would be cool. Yes. Yeah. And so what I think is funny is that the very first time that I met Jorg, I said, oh, what do you do? And he tells me this whole rigmarole to avoid saying pocket pets. And I said, oh, so you do pocket pets. And his, do you remember that? His face fell. He's like,
ah. Okay. Reduced to two words, right?
Moved on from that.
Your entire career reduced to two words. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yes, that's all right. Yes. Simplicity rules, though. I mean, if you can summarize a career in two words, that's awesome.
That's right. Pocket pets. Well, it would be difficult to summarize your career because friends, he would never tell you this. So I'll just say it. I think it's his second edition of his textbook is out, right?
Like, oh, my goodness.
I know.
Now we're working on it. So.
Working on it. Okay. Well, either way, Jason, is your first edition out?
No, not even thought about it. It's not even inkling in my mind. Book?
No, come on. Me either. But that's why Jorg comes in. Because I think one thing that we all have learned in the very recent times, the very recent vexing times of the COVID, is how important pets are. And it doesn't really matter what your pet looks like, because they can provide that same sort of comfort for you. And so that's one reason that I was so happy when Jorg somehow agreed. We twisted the arm, we flipped some cars, we slashed some tires. So Jorg agreed to come on because Jorg, you encounter people with ferrets, rabbits, hedgehogs, gerbils.
You're living up the scales. What's going on here?
Yeah. Basically, if it's not a dog or a cat and you consider it your pet. So it's what we do. So
Yeah. And so what, like, but you're familiar because you're a very lovely spouse. she works with all the things that you don't see, right? So she sees dogs and cats. And so you're familiar with that human animal bond that people talk about with our traditional companion animals. So what do you think, how does that compare when we're talking about the fuzzies and the furries?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I think it compares handsomely. There's nothing really different. I'm going to go further. I'm going to say that, you know, if you have a pet that can live 50 years, the bond is going to be probably has more time to become stronger, right? So if you have a bird, if you have a reptile that can live for 50 years, and it actually passed down to you because grandpa brought it from one of his sailing trip when he was a sailor in Brazil. And you know, and yeah, it's and I'm not making this up. I've had cases like this where they said, you know what, Lorita is a member of the family. Grandpa brought her from Brazil. And like whatever, you know, it's like, don't even ask me. Here's our credit card. You don't have to ask me what it costs. She is a member of the family because we are the second generation and our kids want Lorita as well. And, you know,
that's great.
Yeah. That's, you know, so there's, but to be honest, I mean, the bond that you can form with a rabbit, I mean, is equally great, and you can form with a dog because, like, a rabbit is as smart as a dog. So whatever trick you can teach a dog, a rabbit can do. So
okay, wait, Dr. Meyer, yeah. Dr. What? Meyer, I have to make a slight. I would disagree just slightly there.
Okay, cool. Okay, let's bring it on.
I think that many bunnies may be slightly brighter than Cosette the Farm Fresh Frenchie.
Well, I mean, we have to look at a bigger number because there's some relaxed rabbits. I like to call them relaxed rabbits too. So, which they are refractory to teaching. It's just relaxed.
They're like
smarter than the average rabbit. They're like, I'm not fetching that for you. I'm not jumping over that. I'm like, I'm relaxed.
I'm not doing it.
But I mean, they're pretty cool. And people, I mean, people get very, very attached to their small fuzzies and stuff. So I mean, we love it. And you know, as our society is moving a little bit into an more urbanized environment, you know, I mean, a lot of your listeners probably know if you sign a lease here and there and you live in the 27th floor of an apartment complex, a lot of times dogs and cats or whatever, maybe dogs are no-go, cat maybe, but you know, nobody prohibits you from having a Shelly, the soft shell turtle or something like this, right? And and she can live for a really long time, or the little rabbit. So I think we definitely, over the years, I've seen definitely an increase in these small exotic mammals.
Yeah. So your caseload has increased over the last couple of years. Is that what you're saying? You have a lot of more people, not just having these sort of non-traditional companion animals. I don't really know the right word. Like, apparently I know what I can't call it. We'll call it non-traditional
companion animals. Exotics.
Okay, we can call them exotics. Okay,
one word.
So these exotic animals as family members or pets. And so your caseload, so they're not only having them, but they're taking better care of them, would you say?
I think so. And you know, I do really think so. A couple of things. Just, you know, with YouTube channels, with just having these media resources there, people, like, they have, you know, convenient in the old days, before the war, when I was in the school, you know, you had to go to the old store and buy, like, a book for $19.95.
If they
read.
Had it.
And you had to read. Oh my God, it's horrible. And it wasn't even a PDF. It wasn't a PDF. Yeah. It was like printed.
It was not
page.
Searchable. It was searchable because
it was, but it took you a while, right?
That's right.
So, You know, and then, I mean, I think the information is at everybody's fingertips these days. So it's pretty,
yeah.
So you have to literally be ignorant if you don't want to be educated, because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I mean, you know, again, think about how many specialized products for these animals are now on the market, you know, from
incredible.
From specific feeds to enrichment.
Yeah.
To, you know, I mean, and like when Grandpa brought Lorita from Brazil, right? I mean, he fed her beer nuts or whatever, because, you know, and maybe a pepper shoot. Was all that was for avian food, you know. But now, I mean, we have renal diet for birds, right?
God.
We have liver diet. I mean, so
it's crazy.
So that makes keeping an exotic pet in an adequate condition much easier, and the longevity is increased.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, it's actually, this is going to sound terrible, but it's actually more fun to keep an exotic pet. Now, if you go to the big stores or the local pet store, there's just a whole industry of stuff you can get that's going to help your pet enrich their lives and enrich your life as well. Like, you feel better. Like, I can get this. You know, this thingamajig for Bobby the snake, and he's gonna love it, and he's gonna curl around, and it makes you feel better. You're doing more for your friend there, so that's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot what a lot of times is not being discussed is, you know, traditionally when you think of having a dog or a cat, it's a lot of times based on physical contact, right? I mean,
yeah.
Like you know, kind of like the evil Bond villain has a cat. But he's petting it, right? He's like,
right.
Right. And then, you know, and we know we want to go for walkies with our dogs. So, but when you have an exotic pet, a lot of times there is a joy with just being with them together or looking at them. And there is actually data out there. We know that just staring into an aquarium and looking at an aquarium decreases stress levels, right?
Yes.
And so
yes.
This is why, in my opinion, every dentist should have 2,000-gallon aquariums.
I would agree, 100%.
You know, if you're really anxious, you can maybe, you know, put in your bathing suit and jump in with those, you know, right. To really calm you down.
When are you not anxious? The dentist, come on.
Wait a minute. I think that they should put it not in the waiting room. I think somebody should figure out how to rig it so that when I lay back in that chair,
right,
I'm looking at it instead of these, like, you know, the inspirational quote posters that are less than helpful, right? Like some guy hanging off the side of a cliff saying, hang in there, you know, like, let me look up and see some fishes swimming around.
My favorite one is when they showed the pictures of the guy who only has one snuggle tooth left, you know, kind of like,
yeah.
And then this could be you. You know, can I ask? I'm like, yeah.
That's awesome. Okay.
Yeah, let me look at a fish. Yeah.
We're gonna take a short break, but don't worry, folks, because we've locked the door and Dr. Meyer's hanging in the chat room for a bit longer. So we'll be right back, where we're gonna find out the number one thing that he wishes every single pocket pet owner knew. All right, we'll catch you on the flip side.
With all the fuss happening in the pet food industry, why not invest in something to help guard against digestive health derangements in your pet? Full Bucket's probiotics are formulated by veterinarians to support your pet's normal digestive health. Your pet's gut microbiome is integral to their immune system performance. Why not add Full Bucket's daily dog or daily cat probiotic powder to your pet's daily routine? To curate, protect, maintain, and strengthen your pet's microbiome. Visit fullbuckethelp.com today to check out all of their veterinary strength supplements.
And we're back. And still in the chat room with us, Dr. Jörg Meyer, talking all about our non-traditional companion animals. What I thought was really wonderful was how you talked about the longevity of those pets and the fact that multiple generations in the same family, a lot of times are taking care of it. And that's why it is, you know, like a creature that some people have known their entire lives, because their parents had the creature before they had them. And so there's that commitment, right? There's a level of commitment. Like, a dog might live 15 years, right? A cat might live 20 years, but doesn't necessarily want to be there for the last five necessarily, right? It's hard, but they're not making it 50. So the level of commitment that you know you're in for when you get a reptile, when you get a bird, that sort of thing. I think that's something that really, that's a big deal for folks that get something different.
Yeah, it is. And, it's also cultural. I mean, in our societies, we just love dogs and cats, and it's normal. You're actually the odd one out, right? If you don't have a dog and cat. So, but
Dr. Jason knows about that, being the odd one out, you know.
Yes, I'm all about being the odd one out.
But, in other societies, obviously, yeah. You know, what they would consider, normally we're like, what? You have what as a pet? But I mean, even here, it's like one of my favorite stories, actually, that put it a little bit in perspective was when we had a patient, and it's many, many moons ago, you can still find the stories online because it made for some interesting PR. And so we had actually a goose in the hospital that was presented for treatment because of cancer.
Oh,
and
I'm sorry. Did you say a goose?
A goose.
Yeah, a goose.
Oh, okay.
A goose.
All right.
Gray
cancer
goose.
With a yeah. And a goose.
A
all
goose.
Right.
Yeah, like the gray goose, not the one drinking. The one.
All right.
The one.
No, I got it.
Hong Kong.
I got it. Not the gray goose. I got it. All right.
Well, it was actually a gray goose.
It was a gray goose, but not.
Yeah,
you know.
That's what I'm saying. Not. You know. So we obviously it presented for lameness. Long story short, we diagnosed that it was a very aggressive bone cancer.
Oh.
And so basically, it was an osteosarcoma. And in a dog, if that would affect a dog, you would one of the treatments would be to amputate the leg because as they say, dogs come with three legs plus a spare.
Right. So you can always take a leg with two legs.
So we couldn't turn that goose into a pogo goose, right? I mean, so because
oh my God.
Because you can't do this kind of surgery in a heavy-bodied bird because then they would develop lesions on the other side of the leg. So that kind of routine treatment wasn't an option for us. And to be honest, and these are kind of like these examples what really draws me into this exotic medicine field, because a lot of times we're being put on the spot and we have to think outside the box, and we have to just like do the same, but different, very differently.
Uh-huh.
And that's what's attractive to me. But so anyway, what we decided is, we'll have to go with medical management. And so an adjunct chemotherapy and adjunct radiation.
Wow.
And so we did radiate that lesion.
Uh-huh.
And so and the goose was amazing. And so it was imprinted on the owner, obviously, because he bought it from the feedlot store, while it was kind of like a couple of days old. And
the
it was
day after Easter.
So he would just walk into hospital and the goose would follow him, and he would sit in the waiting area and the goose would sit on the floor next to him. And it was like a little. And so then it would follow me into the radiation suite.
Uh-huh.
And there was at the time there was a dog getting radiated for a nasal tumor, and I went into the radiation area and I sat down and the goose sat next to me, and somebody was sitting next to me in that treatment area where you kind of like wait where the patient comes out of the nuclear radiation chamber there. And so that person looked at me, we made eye contact. I said, "What's up?" And
wait, you gave him a nod.
I gave him a nod. And anyway, she had like a little like a legal pad and it was rippling, and she's like, "What's up with the goose?" It's like, "Well, it's a patient. It's one of my patients getting radiation." It's like, "The goose is getting radiation." I'm like, "Yeah." So we started to talk a little bit. It turns out she was actually a reporter for the Boston Globe.
Oh.
And she was actually writing a story about how these treatment modalities that were initially all treatment modalities that we have in human medicine, obviously, guess what? They have been first tried and tested on animals, right?
Of course.
Before we want to radiate the first primate.
Hello.
And so basically, and so her story was really cool. And so it was kind of like, look how it's 360, you know, like clearly radiation in the 60s, you know, the height of the Cold War, there were a lot of papers being published. There was a lot of research funded because everybody thought, you know, Cuba, the missile crisis, yeah. Everybody, you know, the next nuclear holocaust is around the corner.
Right.
Yeah. And so this is why a lot of scientific research was generated in the 60s regarding radiation. And then it made its way, obviously, into radiation as a therapeutic agent also. And so her story was like, look, you know, now the animals benefit from it. And so she was highlighting that dog that's being treated. And so she asked me at the end, she was fascinated by this whole story with the goose. And she says, do you mind I could put a little footnote on the side of this article about the goose? And I'm like, yeah, I'm totally fine. Talk to the owner. Obviously, you know, you need to consent. And long story short, yeah, the owner of the goose. And long story short, the article was all about the goose.
Of course.
I don't know the dog if I made it.
Yeah, poor dog. Got scooped by the goose.
He got scooped by the goose.
Basically, what happened, the owner and the reporter became kind of like on a personal level friends. And she had a TV show. And so eventually we were on the TV show together.
Oh my gosh.
And so the goose's name is Boswell. And so he has actually, he had his own blog. It was called The Daily Honk. And so you can still, if you search for Boswell the Goose, you can still read up on these stories and see his stuff. But I mean, a couple of things that came out of this, which still to this day, stays with me. And I thought it was very thoughtful, very, very nice. So first of all, the owner, mm-hmm. you know, said that, you know, when it came about, you know, like, yeah, that's expensive. You're going to treat it's like you have to bring him back and forth for these chemotherapies. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, and we wouldn't even ask that. We wouldn't even ask that of anyone that brings that dog or the cat in. Right. We're like, oh, this is great. What you're doing. And suddenly it's a goose and the narrative shifts a little bit, you know,
so it like, does. Well,
and so, for example, a goose can, if you look it up, it can easily live over 20 years. So. Yeah.
Yep.
So and you know, and he said something that really stuck with me. And he said, you know, he said something to the reporter, and I heard it also. And he says, you know what? That goose is the best dog I've ever had. You know, and it was just magical, their relationship. And then the reporter, you know, said, you know, that costs a lot of money. You spend a lot of money for the cancer treatment. And again, I think, you know, and she really phrased that beautifully, because I think when you interview somebody, you know, your neighbor, a friend, somebody mm-hmm. that you meet and you talk about it, I mean, not interview, but I mean, when you talk to somebody and, you know, they do cancer treatment and they're happy to tell you, it's like, oh, I brought my dog in and we had his leg amputated and now he's getting radiation or chemo and we're going to go weekly or every other week. And, you know, nobody asks us like, well, how much money are you going to spend on this? Because it's like, oh, you're a good person to do it.
Yeah.
And anyway, and so, you know, when we deal with these exotics, with these goose, suddenly the money comes up. Like, what's that suddenly about? You know, it's like, no, there's this amazingly strong bond between this right. owner and this goose. And the goose, I mean, the goose was phenomenal. You know, so basically the reporter said, you know what? Like, if you would spend all that money and you would buy a fancy car, like a Porsche or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. You know, people would never second guess us. They would say, oh, you're a successful person. You can afford a Porsche. But if you spend, you know, money on that, they like start whispering, right? I was like, what's something wrong, weird.
Right? What's happening there, right?
And yeah, and what's going on here? And I thought, you know, wow, how thoughtful of that reporter, you know, to mm-hmm. point that out, because mm-hmm. nobody would have asked, oh, you got a new Volvo, you got a new this. Well, that must have been expensive. But it's like, you're driving your goose in the Volvo to the university clinic. You know, what's up with that?
And like, you know,
but
what?
Nobody would say, you're driving your dog to the clinic.
But you know what the best response is? Oh, gosh, you're taking your goose for that? And you think, you don't? Right. I mean, but that's what I love. And I think what's another interesting thing about the last 18 months or so is that we've got to know so much more about everyone's home life than we ever thought we would, just working next to them every day, day in, day out for at least a third of our lives. We had no idea how they lived, right?
Yeah.
You just don't know. And you know what? And nobody asked you for your opinion about how I live, and what I choose to have as my pet, as long as I'm taking care of it and it's healthy and I seek care appropriately. And like you said, now there's so much better care available for every kind of species. Why would we not promote that bond if people have it, you know? Because
and we can't put a value. We can't put a value on it. Right. I mean, it's like if you bond with a tarantula, why would that be less of any value than you bonding with Mr. Snucky Cat? You know, right. Kind of like
100%, 100%.
Yeah. I would say on another note with the bond thing, and you guys can probably corroborate or tell me I'm crazy, but the bonding with humans and birds is something to behold, right? It can be extremely strong. We grew up with animals, and I was so young, I don't necessarily remember, but I had a bond with a bird.
Wait, tell them what kind.
Some kind of crown crane. But I can only imagine what it would look like, right, to see that goose following that person. And then the doctor, it had to be such an awesome spectacle. But I mean, I've seen that time and time again. I'm not poo-pooing the bond of any other animals, but birds seem to have a special situation a lot of times with one person. But it is very special when you see the bird, the avian bond with humans. It's very cool. It's very strong. It's almost palpable, right?
Yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, it probably has something to do with that the vast majority of these birds are, you know, they live in flocks, right? Right. I mean, the natural history.
Yeah, they look for their group.
They look for companions, right? Mm-hmm. And so then, mm-hmm. so it's, there's a lot of their inert.
Right, they're more open to it, bond, maybe. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. They need the bonds. And then, you know, you got to be careful because it can become a pathological bond, right? Inappropriate
for
bond.
For sure.
Where they want to have babies.
Wrong kind of bond, as we said.
This is not that kind of podcast. This is not the kind of show, friends.
Well, you know, it's kind of like, so we got to keep it PG-13.
Keep it on the up and up here.
So, no, but I mean, you got to be, because how does saying go, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yes.
So you got to be, and I always, when I have people in the exam room and you know, it happens quite frequently where an inappropriate bond is there, meaning, it's just like this bird has its blinders on and it's just basically it's kind of like this ex-girlfriend or ex-boyfriend that just doesn't crazy. Accept that the relationship is over. And they're like, how about now? Are we going to come back? Like, how about now? Right? And so it's like, whoa. You know, it's like we need to have some borders. You know, so,
some boundaries. And so boundaries are healthy. Boundaries are healthy.
What I tell most of my, like, let's face it, most of my bird owners are parrot owners, right? We're talking about cytokines.
Yeah. Right.
And so we know from a neuroanatomy kind of like research that they have the same kind of neurological capability like a human 5-year-old, right?
Right.
So that's why I tell them, it's like if you're trying to figure out how to deal with it, think of like, you know, how would you interact with a 5-year-old? And so I always tell them in the exam room. So, for example, you know, right, if you would bring a 5-year-old, there would have been some, you know, it should be fun, obviously, you know, we're a fun crowd, but there would be some rules kind of like, you know, so we come in, we have these chairs, you know, you would kind of like expect that we're all sitting down. Well, maybe the kid is walking around, right? But I wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't accept that he would take his magic markers out and starts painting on the wall, right?
Right.
Or licking the table or something right. like this. And the kid is not going to do it because they want to be destructive or they want to be evil. They want to do it because it's fun, right? Mm-hmm. So it just, but they don't know the difference between wrong or right now. So we need to say, look, you know, it's like if you do the magic markers, you've got to stay within the lines, mm-hmm. you know, we got to stay within the coloring book. And it's the same with the birds, right? Mm-hmm. So we got to train these birds to follow certain mm-hmm. rules. But in, you know, what I tell them is like, that is just going to make the bond stronger, right?
That's
it means interaction. It means you.
Communication.
You and the bird are like, you know, kind of like negotiating, figuring stuff out. And that's exactly what they do in the wild too.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of like, they have to do the whole kind of dance to attract a new mate. You know, they got to do like, ooh, look at me. Look at me.
Yeah.
Right. And then she's probably going to say, yeah, no. Yeah, I was like, I'm going to fly to that next branch. There's a guy with much better plumage, right?
I really hope we're recording the York Meyer bird dance here.
We are.
Right?
Okay. We are. We have it, friends. But so,
all right.
But York, I think that, and you and I have talked about this before, that people seem to, for some reason, kind of abandon all common sense when you just insert like a different species, right? So like you're talking about, like in the wild, their social contemporaries would say, yeah, that's not acceptable. Like, don't be acting like that. You're going to draw the predators, you moron. Like, we're not hanging out with you, right? Like, and
they would, it's called a pecking order.
Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ah, very good. And so, but I find the same thing. So, for instance, when I was working with folks and we were raising up little baby gorillas. So they communicate. And when their mom is raising them, their mom is teaching them that it's not acceptable to randomly bite the crap out of anyone next to you. And, you know, she flings them into a ravine and they have to catch up or something, right?
Gorillas give spankies, yeah.
Yes. And so, but it's not even that. It's like that. No one wants to be around that. And so, because people would say, well, how come he doesn't bite you? He bites all of us. And I'm like, wow, you let him bite you. And they would be like, well, what do you mean we let him? I'm like, well, did you tell him that was not acceptable? I mean, we can't hit him. And I'm like, yeah, why would you hit him? That's not effective. That's just going to piss him off, you know? Yeah. And then he'll wait till he's bigger.
So throw him into a ravine.
Yeah. I mean, you don't throw them into a ravine, but you appropriately alert them that I have zero interest in being around a creature that's going to randomly bite me. Right.
But also, I mean, like everybody brags how they brought their puppy to obedience class. Like that's the same, you know,
right.
The same. You learn your dog, you know, learns those rules because you taught him those.
Right. You have to learn how to communicate with each other. Right. Like, Cosette. I know she has understood the word no when she gets mad about it. Before that, she doesn't yet hear me telling her not to do it, right? And so it's that, but you're right, that's what deepens the bond. And it doesn't
100%.
Doesn't matter what kind of creature it is. Doesn't matter. 100%. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I think that's fantastic. And now, so I do want to bring to the forefront for people listening, one of the most recent species that I know that you are dedicating a lot of time to, as we're talking about communication, it's one of the like most socially complex and communicative creatures, bees.
That's it. Gosh, yes. I love bees.
I know. So, but you're helping other people recognize how to love bees and how to take care of them. So what was your fascination with bees? Like why did, because one day, okay, friends. So here's how it goes. Hey, York, how's it going? Great, Jen. What's happening down there? Oh, not too much, you know, just working on the farm. Yeah. What's going on there? I don't know. I'm headed out to the hive. Oh, yeah. I started doing this bee stuff. So what, like all of a sudden, like you're this bee guy. What happened?
Well, I mean, it's not all of a sudden. I mean, I've been keeping bees for like 15, 16 years already.
Yeah.
So, but at the time it wasn't sexy, I guess. And now,
it was a secret.
It was like, yeah, this is weird. No, but I've been keeping bees for a long time and I was fascinated. And so suddenly they, you know, I think the media has put them a little bit more in the center, ran a lot of stories on, you know, we have pollinator week, we have, you know, but unfortunately, I think all this is fueled by you know, what a lot of times has been referred as colony collapse disorder,
crisis.
By a global decline of bees and stuff, because, crisis. I mean, we still haven't figured it out 100%, but you know, it's probably like synergism of environmental pressures, like pesticides, like, you know, emerging, you know, invasive diseases, pathogens, parasites, all that stuff. So we're still figuring it out. But no, why I have been getting probably a little bit more, or why it has been getting a little bit more attention with me as well, is because I started to introduce it into the kind of like veterinary curriculum. Because
that became a thing. That became a thing, like for all of a sudden, apiarists, right, beekeepers, all of a sudden had to have a vet who actually knew what a bee was, you know, well, because exactly, of the veterinary feed directive, right?
That's right. So because until 2017, like if you, and let's face it, the vast majority of apiaries have done their own thing for the longest time, extremely knowledgeable people. And if there was a veterinarian involved, it was because that veterinarian had bees and was part of the local beekeepers association or whatever club.
Yep. Right. He was a beekeeper that became a veterinarian.
Something like that. Right. So, but you know, if somebody diagnosed a disease that required an antibiotic, then they would just go to a local tractor supply, farm supply store, right? And get a bag of tetracycline and sprinkle it like in the hive. And so with that whole global issue of multi-resistant bacteria arising, you know, the antibiotics being a little bit more monitored, the use of antibiotics, especially in agriculture. And so now the bees falling under that purview as well of the FDA, where now you can't just walk into a feedlot supply or whatever and get a 20-pound bag. You need a veterinarian to write you a prescription.
Yeah.
And so this is what I refer a little bit at the moment as a shotgun wedding. Because you know, so a lot of veterinarians kind of like suddenly, you know, get a phone call from like, hey, my bees are sick, I need tetracycline, and they're like, what? And so you know, in the future, it's very obvious that that veterinarians gonna get more contact with apiarists. So basically that is one reason why I wanted to introduce our new graduating veterinarian to what a beehive is and what it looks like. And I mean, they don't have to know like how to extract honey or how to identify a queen or what a drone is.
No.
They don't, but at least they should be kind of, okay, here's a disease that can be treated and here's what the disease looks like. And this is how much antibiotic you need for a hive. And so, but what it then has snowballed into a little bit, you know, I'm like, well, why not use the hive? And a lot of times when you read a little bit more literature that goes a little bit deeper, they refer actually to the hive as a superorganism.
Yes.
So what you look at it is like you're not looking, if you're looking at the bee as, or the bee as your patient, like it's not the bee as your patient, right?
No.
So the way how you want to look at it, if it would be a mammal, so the bee is basically a red blood cell, right?
Yeah.
So, but thousands and thousands and thousands of those cells make up an organism, right? And so basically the beehive itself, that colony, that's our patient, okay? Yep. And so what's really fascinating, what I just still, I mean, you know, I could talk forever, you know, about this. I mean, it's amazing. So just give you one example. So some of the bee researchers, you know, they have actually suggested, well, the beehive should actually get honorary mammal status because it has so many physiological similarities with a mammal. And so that triggered me. It's like, wow, you know, it's like, why don't we use beehives to teach our even first year veterinary students on aspects of veterinary medicine? Because like you name me the topic, I can give you an hour of it in around bees. So just for an example, inside the beehive, right? Inside the core cluster where the queen does her thing and stuff, there's this cluster.
Yes.
And so there's a constant temperature. It's always about 93 to 95 degrees Fahrenheit. So no matter what, if you're in Massachusetts, if you're in Canada and you're keeping bees in January where it can be minus 25 degrees, that cluster is 95 degrees.
That's crazy.
Like a warm-blooded animal.
It's like a mammal. Yeah. It's like a warm-blooded animal, right? So there's many, many other examples. So basically, they're very, very slow reproduction rate. Very slow reproduction rate. Because, yes, the queen is laying about 1,000 eggs a day, which itself is metabolically... She basically lays her same weight in eggs. That means that if a woman would weigh 150 pounds... she would deliver babies worth of 150 pounds every day. Just think about metabolically how crazy that idea is, right?
Yeah.
So
and
basically,
how much energy, how much nutrition, how much resources it would take to support that single female at that rate of production. right?
But it's crazy.
It's incredible.
But, I mean, so what I'm saying is actually, so it sounds like, well, wait a minute. You said it's a very slow rate of reproduction. And she like, yeah, it's a very slow rate of reproduction because all of these 1,000 eggs, right, that she's laying every day are basically clones, right?
Right.
They're all more or less the same. The only time when when that organism actually reproduces is when they swarm, when the own queen leaves a young queen then behind, and that young queen gets mated by a drone, right?
Yep.
So now that is a reproduction because you have new genetic material introduced.
Yep. Right.
And so that only happens in a blue moon. So like, again, like a mammal, it's a very slow rate. So, and I can keep going. So many things that are just equivalent to higher, you know, vertebrate order animals, you know, so which is just fascinating that their communication is actually a language. It meets the definition of a language, right? Yep. I mean, it's crazy if you think about it.
Is anyone, any other Trekkies out there thinking of the Borg collective? Because it's like, for me, I'm like, it should be in a cube, and because they're all connected, they communicate in a way that is not always readily apparent to non-Borg, and they keep everything is happy inside the cube, and that's how the Borg continue to exist. It's crazy, I know, but that's how, like, I like to think of the bees, but that is one of the phenomenal things that I think has come about with that single piece of regulation. So I'm saying it here first. That was okay. That was a good regulation.
Oh.
Because it did that, but it's true. And I think all those concepts of herd health, ecological health, one health, all those things that impact all the individuals within the single organism of the hive, all of those concepts are readily demonstrated with bees. And so, yeah, okay, so I'm going to drag the soapbox. I'm going to yank it out from underneath you, Jorg, so that we don't carry on about the bees.
I know.
Because I also find bees very fascinating, which is why I brought it up.
I saw the shirt earlier. Stand up proud. Be proud of that shirt.
It's a bee shirt. Yay.
Yeah, for those of you who can't see, he's got literally has a bee on his heart. On his shirt. Aww, love the bees.
Yes, we love it. Okay, so we have come to the time where I'm going to ask you for like the number one top thing that you wish that most every client that you run into would know. And you could go to like two things if you want, but what do you wish that they would know? What would help them? And you're like, man, if they just knew this, I wouldn't even see them. Like, I wouldn't have.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty easy. That's pretty easy.
Oh,
I mean,
well, okay.
Yeah, I mean, since we're dealing with these exotic things, so what I want them to know is, I want them to know, what is the lifestyle? What is the natural history of your pet in the wild?
Oh, that's great.
Right?
Okay, because, why? But why? Why? How come?
Because if you know that, then you know exactly what would be the right temperature. What would be an appropriate food? Like, is there yogurt trees, yogurt bushes having little yogurt berries growing? No. yogurt is usually not the right nutrition for them, right?
Why do people think yogurt is good for every creature?
I don't know. It tastes good. No, but I mean, so that's my number one thing. And that's what I tell my students that you need to know. You can't adequately take, or you can't even ask adequate question about a bearded dragon, about this tortoise, about the Moluccan cockatoo, if you don't know where is the Moluccan cockatoo from, where is that thing from, and does it live in a tree? Does it live under the sea? Does it live on sand? Does it live in a hiding space and it is nocturnal? It only wants to come out at night. Because if you have an animal that is mainly coming out at night, but you think, you know, you should play with it every afternoon and you should poke it and getting out of its hiding hole, that animal is going to die a horribly slow death because you're going to immunocompromise it. So that is my number one thing. Like, just if you get this, or before you get that, read up on what is the lifestyle of that animal in the wild. Mm-hmm. Does it live alone? Does it live with 400 other co-specifics, right? Mm-hmm. Does it, you know, and what does it eat? Can I do that? You know, so... Because then, to be honest, I kind of would talk myself out of a job here, actually, because I always say that, you know, 80% of the stuff that we see is somehow related to mismanagement in husbandry in kept days. If we dig deep enough, we'll find, oh, ew. So yes, while that animal fell off the couch and fractured its leg,
yes,
that seems like a traumatic event. But let's face it, in the wild, animals fall off branches. They fall off, oh, yeah, you know, little things, but they don't.
Oh, yeah.
But the leg was brittle. The bone was very brittle because guess what? You didn't feed enough calcium, or you didn't provide enough sunlight, or something like this, right? So we can usually trace it to something that could have been preventable. And, you know,
that's, and 100% that, I mean, that's what we think, right? Yeah. Like Jason, do you feel like, dang, did your grow up exactly the way we did?
Yeah. Outside's as important as the inside, for sure. That was a great point and well said.
Yes, I love it. I agree. Now, then I'm going to push you one question further in, like, into that philosophy, because I get very tired of having to tell people, kind of hold the mirror up and say, why are you judging that person for the creature that they've chosen to share their life with? Right. Whether you're judging their husband or their wife, or you're judging their choice of pet or companion animal, I should say. If people do that research, and if they are committed to providing as close as possible an environment to what the creature naturally would live in and be happy and healthy in, then do you think that, yeah, okay, that's all right. Do you think that's reasonable for folks to do?
Yeah. Why not?
Right. That's what I say. Like, why not?
Oh, okay.
Why not?
Yeah, I wasn't sure what the question was.
I thought that was a trick.
I was like, wait, where's the question? So what you're saying, Dr. Jen, is if you can provide research and you can provide it, then it doesn't matter. Go ahead. And if you're able to provide similar natural situation, then go for it.
Well, I mean, a lot of times we actually, if you do it appropriately, we have a lot of time. We have a potential to expand the lifespan of these individuals beyond the natural lifespan, right?
Right.
Because we then suddenly take care of a geriatric animal that would have been in the wild coyote food or hawk food, right? But but because it lives with us in the living room, it doesn't have to worry about that, right?
And so, it doesn't have to compete.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
But then we need to know, like, how is that geriatric lifestyle, right? Then suddenly a lot of animals change their nutrition. They become, so if they're a little bit, like, initially, if they're omnivore and they're a little bit more carnivorous, they start to become more vegetarian when they're. So we just need to keep reading up on it. We need to keep educating ourselves. But no, that's a good thing.
I hey man, like, I think so. And if you, like, do that investigation and then you find yourself, oops, I didn't do enough. And now I'm in a situation because for 10 years I've had this creature and now I find myself, hey, look, there is help there. Like, that's okay. You're not a bad person. As long as you continue to seek that better care, for, you know, for your companion animal. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah. And I think, so often we try to find fault with the person who's seeking care for their companion animal. Society does, right? We say, oh, look at that. They didn't. Well, hey, they're here trying. So I think that's part of it. But perhaps that's why we're friends. Maybe.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah,
that seems alien to me, the thought, like, that somebody's getting criticized for providing care. I mean, I don't know. I should get out more, I guess.
No, don't. Stay with your hive.
I'm happy in a little
No, that's favorite human pastime is to criticize others. I mean, come on, it's been that way forever.
It is. It's true.
Dr. Jen criticizes me all the time. So
all
I just get used to it.
All the time. Well, yeah. And I will say, throwback to, we do love commercially available things now because the industry has evolved. When we were growing up and we were hand feeding, citizens, we had to make our own, right? Cause all these commercially available hand feeding formulas didn't exist. And so, you know, who knew you could boil certain monkey chow and then add some baby food and some other, and you can raise stuff right up. You know, and they'll do great, but that's really, really labor intensive. So,
And based solely on what mom would be giving baby anyways, not we just randomly did stuff. No, we did our best with what we had, right? Do your best 100%. With what we had.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to mimic what mom would give them. So, Okay. So now we're back full circle, which we like to run circles in the chat room, apparently. Jason, do you have any other burning questions for Herr Dr. Meyer?
tons of burning questions, but maybe we can reserve that for another podcast, because I think that we're going to, the questions I asked are going to be deep and hard to answer in a short time. So we'll reserve those for the next time we have the pleasure.
Yes. Yes. We will twist his arm, folks. We'll try to trick him back into the chat room so that so we can explore.
Maybe we should read the reviews first before we send an invitation. It's like,
not that
I
guy.
Just wasted a whole hour of my life that I'm never going
to get. No, here's how that works. If the reviews are bad, you come on and do a better job. If the reviews are good, which they're going to be, then you come on and do it again. Okay. Like, what's the problem here?
Yes. Oh, that was easy.
Yeah. That was easy. Yeah, no, of course. We love it. And we do listen to the chatterboxes. And so, chatterboxes, if you're listening and you love Dr. Meyer, hey, let us know. Drop a comment on YouTube. Drop a review on Apple Podcasts. Tell us like what you think, because we listen. We listen. So I do think that's all we have for today's episode. I'm Dr. Jen the Vet.
And I'm Dr. Jason.
Thank you so much, Dr. Meyer. And we will see all of you back in the chat room on the next episode.
This episode of Chats with the Chatfields is brought to you by Full Bucket Veterinary Strength Supplements.